actually eliminating to have a look at the ethical position that's here. You remember, in the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve were living there, and they were perfect company. They didn't need any answers. It was only when they partook of that tree of the knowledge of good and evil that happened. They knew good and evil. That's the word they want. Ethics. I won't read this passage, just do a few on it, but I run out of time. I thought I would talk about three things. I'm going to spend most of my time talking about item number two here, which is this business of the secular bioethics and the question of its foundation. Chris Engelhardt, who is a bioethicist in Texas, has written this book, The Foundations of Bioethics, and this is what has provoked me to come up with a response. And I just want to say a little bit about how I became concerned about this. Just about the time when I was looking at this book, God fell on me, you might say, and I had a very close personal encounter with the whole healthcare system. I came down with a disease, and no one knew what it was for a moment. We thought it could be things like multiple strokes, cerebral carcinoma, MS, etc. It turned out to be something they call a post-viral neuropathy. I had no deep reflexes. I was ataxic. I couldn't walk a straight line for the policeman on the highway. I was seeing double, my eyes weren't focused properly, and a whole host of things. Anyways, I was in the hospital for 10 days and went through all of these things like a CT scan and all these evoked potential things and NMR scans, brain scans, and so on. So it made me think, here I was, flat on my back, unable to move hardly, not because I couldn't quite move, but if I moved, I would fall over or something, you know. So I really was dependent on other people, hand and foot. And it occurred to me that I had to trust everybody there. Came and said, well, now it's time to get this injection or they're going to poke this needle in me. I have to trust. And I did trust them. And I had wonderful care, I must say. This was in our hospital. Thinking about this question of foundations, that gave me sort of another impetus thinking about what are the real foundations of the ethical situation, the background for the healthcare system as we know it. And then I thought, well, what is my response as a Christian? And so that's what I want to talk about. I'm going to spend most of my time in trying to deal with Chris Engelhardt's book. Now, just to review some of the circumstances of how this secular bioethics has come about. Usually people say that it's all this new biotechnology that has forced a reconsideration of ethics, but I think that this was going on a long ago before that in terms of the collapse of the moral consensus and the fact that we live in a multicultural situation where many competing things, ethical systems vie for predominance. And what biotechnology has done is to force a number of redefinitions of what it means to be a human being, what it means to be, what is life, what is a human, what is a person, what is death. You know, we have now, instead of death being defined in terms of a vapor being condensed on a mirror and when you hold it in front of a person's nostrils or something, it's been forced back into brain death sort of thing. Also, we have a situation where the whole healthcare system is facing a lot of limitations. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. It's something we all know. It's a lot of limitations. However, on the other hand, we have a lot of rising expectations. Everybody expects that good health care is a right of every citizen. Now, here we are then in this secular pluralistic society. And what Engelhardt talks about is how do you fashion a secular bioethic that's going to work and form a peaceable community. And to make a long story short, he has two foundational principles: autonomy and beneficence. Autonomy meaning mutual respect and its corollary of not doing evil and of not using force on other people, and beneficence of doing good and the corollary of not doing evil. So that's what I want to consider here. The whole premise on which the book is based is the stance to say that the criterion is rationality. In other words, you've got to be able to give reasons for why you're going to do this as opposed to that. But this is the only way you can speak to these various moral communities. Now, what has happened is that biomedical advances has changed our thinking, like the whole evolution, our knowledge of how species arise and so on, has given us questions about human origins that go back to saying then that man is not necessarily a creature who was, you know, de novo, created out of clay, and that he has connections, biological connections to the rest of the living world. Secondly, we have the machine metaphor, Descartes, that man can be regarded as a biological machine. And indeed, all of our technological advances are based upon that machine model of the human body. And then this whole business of the philosophical concepts, this redefinition of what is life, what is death, what is a person. This business of personhood is an interesting one, because in Engelhardt's discussion, from a technical standpoint, a philosophical standpoint, he would say that the person is a person who can participate in a moral community. In other words, it's a self-conscious individual who has a moral sense, who can weigh moral alternatives and accept praise or blame, or make decisions judging praise and blame situations. So therefore, he would rule out entities that cannot participate in that moral community. Those are some of the implications or consequences of that kind of thing. And this has been going on for some time. All these books on bioethics are going around giving different views, redefining these concepts in different ways. The other kind of event is, of course, the whole business of genetic engineering and the possibility of restructuring man. I'm going to talk more about that. And then the whole premise of Engelhardt's book is to say that there needs to be a secular consensus. And the aim of it, so far as I can see, he doesn't say it quite explicitly, but it's the business of achieving peace for all time in these divergent moral communities. amongst these moral communities. And the way it's going to be instituted is because the governing body has to come up with some policy decisions and promulgate regulations, laws that are going to, in fact they are, laying down how we are to proceed, how the healthcare system is to work, and come to decisions on very specific things. Now, the question is, what are the presuppositions behind this this attempt? And these are Engelhardt's presuppositions that he lays out. He says that bioethics is able to point to the moral significance of choices in biomedicine. In other words, it would rationally try to sort out what the praise, blame type of judgments that can be made with respect to various kinds of alternative actions that may be taken. And he says also then that bioethics is a means of bringing about peaceful negotiations across or between among different moral intuitions, different moral communities, and different moral traditions. On the other hand, bioethics is unable to really give very specific directions for particular moral problems. It cannot be a way of laying down specific moral counseling answers. And also, it is unable to answer questions of ultimate purpose. And so therefore, the main principles that we talked about are, that is, of autonomy and beneficence, are based upon the notion of respect owed to persons, that there are certain limits to the application of reason, and that there are limits on authority to use force. And this means that since it cannot answer specific kinds of questions, it still requires particular moral communities to make specific decisions of whether to do this as opposed to that in any particular circumstance. In other words, the Christian community has to have their own answers for whether they're going to have abortions or not abortions, and so on and so forth, and under what circumstances. But in general, those kinds of specific questions about an individual would have to be decided within that moral community. However, from the overarching point of view of government regulations, you would have to have much more overall permission to do what must be done in order to uphold the principle of autonomy, for example. Now the consequences, I'm going to have to run it fast here. Consequences are, or the requirements are, that there be this peaceable society, that there should be a toleration of deviant lifestyles. When you allow autonomy going on, there, then you're going to have to put up with all sorts of funny things. And you may have to accept people's wrong decisions. The caregiver has to allow somebody to go and decide to pull the plug on himself. And there's going to be, as he calls it, an untidy diversity. These principles, to reiterate again, is autonomy and beneficence. Autonomy meaning that there are no unauthorized actions on others. That this principle now then justifies the generation of generating a specific content. In other words, how you handle particular situations will be based upon this overarching principle of autonomy. Beneficence, on the other hand, is a business of doing good. There are, however, it can only work within the constraints of respect for persons. Just because you think you're going to do somebody good, you can't override his own autonomy, is what he's saying. And that this leads to then concrete decisions about what's morally good. And basically, he would say that it's based upon a web of sympathy. You can't legislate doing good, but you have to have some stimulation or some community of people who would favor being able to do good to others. Now, he goes on, of course, in his book, and he handles all sorts of specific kinds of things. I'm not going to go into because we just don't have the time. The specific kinds of issues are, you know, specific issues like abortion, about genetic engineering, about handling death situations, and so on, and redistribution of resources. But they arise from these principles, and I wanted to do was to talk about the principles. Here's my critique. I would say, first off, is that the problems arise from the inconsistency with which these notions are applied. Specifically, you know, he says that it's the rational basis has to be given for each one of these things. But in fact, there's no rational basis is given for this principle of autonomy per se. In other words, autonomy is taken for granted as a basic assumption. That's my reading of the book. Now, I may be wrong. You may be a little. It's a big book and it takes a lot of digestion. So he may have something hidden away there, but it's certainly not very prominent. What's the rational basis for autonomy? And I think that the counter-argument is to say that human beings, we all of us, we know we're all limited. We are not autonomous by any means. And there's no and he gives no reason for saying that the social organization should, the organization of society should be fixed up to guarantee autonomy. There's no justification for saying you're going to establish a peaceful community. You know, this whole business of tolerance of these various moral stances, the various moral communities have, to tolerate various diverse moral stances doesn't, from my point of view, doesn't mean that they're all equally valid. But he makes the assumption implicitly that they are, in fact, all equally valid. So in terms of establishing a peaceful community, in fact, government regulations implies, again, that you're going to apply the force of the government to coerce people into following these government regulations. So the use of force is not really abandoned. It's still there. It's just phrased in a different way. There's no justification given for accepting the minimal moral stance. That, you know, it's like the least common denominator of all these moral stances. And even if you had only two different moral communities vying for attention, the way he's got it set up, you take the minimalist one, which would maybe be quite far away from the kind of consensus you could achieve within a given society. It's really intolerant of all religious moral stances because it simply discounts any religious foundation of any moral stance. There's no attempt to establish why rationality should be the criteria. In fact, most moral choices are made on other than rational basis, as it turns out. And you know, I didn't show you yet, but the whole part of the implications here is that this stance that he has can lead to the idea that it would be perfectly all right to. Well, I shouldn't say perfectly all right. That it would lead to the stance that you must allow the possibility of technology altering the human genetic code of altering human beings, and may become that humans would become an entirely different species, ET, etc. And there's no rationale given for For accepting such weird conclusions. It's as if, it's a really a fatalistic stance. It's as if you said, well, I'm going to set up these rules, these rationality rules over here, and then whatever it does, I'm going to do, because I'm forced into it. But it's not. See, there has been this initial assumption. And out of that, there's all these kinds of things. It's sort of a fatalistic, non-